We're holding on page Yud Gimel in Megillah, about six, seven lines from the bottom. We're holding middle of Os Yud Beis. We're in the middle of learning about the drushas of the psukim of the Megillah. I didn't have a chance to mention yesterday, by the way, but when we were talking about Nenu Misudasa Shaloi Sudasha, a couple of other interesting things in that regard. First of all, the Maharam Shif talks about, he says, when Talmidim asks Rav Shimon ben Yochai the question, why is he answering them back? You give an answer first, and then when he rejects their answer, then he gives them an answer. If they're asking the question, evidently they don't know the answer. And he says, because since they said, why do they deserve to be wiped out entirely? So Rav Shimon understands from the way they're saying, they don't understand what they did that's so severe that would deserve a gzera of complete extermination. But he does understand they did do something that make them liable, that made them liable with some kind of punishment. So he asks to tell me, what do you think that was? And when they say nenusumisudase, then he objects that it was only in that case, that's only the people in Shushan. And so the conversation goes from there. The other vert about it was saying when nenusudase. So besides all the various points that we talked about yesterday, there's also the point, even if they were, the fact is, I mean, Achashverosh is inviting them to the party. They can't very well refuse necessarily. There is a degree of onus over there, even though we're going to learn soon. Vashsiach hadas ein onus. That means as far as nobody was forced to drink too much or whatever, but to actually go to the party, they couldn't necessarily get out of it so easily, but at least they didn't have to enjoy it. They tell them this connection, a story with a yid who was drafted into the army, and he goes beforehand to ask a shayla, what am I supposed to do about the food they're going to serve? And is going to serve there, it's not going to be kosher. So the Rav tells him, listen, you're going to have to eat. It's a matter of pikuach nefesh, but at least don't suck out the marrow from the bones. You don't have to go overboard with the hanah of it. So here, the problem was not so much that they were there and they ate, but that they had hanah from it, whereas they should have felt like they were doing it under duress. Okay, continuing with the Gemara. When it says Bachatzar Ginas Bisan HaMelech, the pasuk says that the party took place in the courtyard of the garden of the Bisan of the king. Now, a courtyard is a courtyard. Ginas is Rashi on the pasuk explains means a vegetable garden, and Bisan Rashi over there also on the pasuk explains that it means a grove of trees. There are different other explanations, including that the Ibn Ezra says that Bisan means the actual palace. Anyway, so why the three expressions? So Rabbi Shmuel, argue what that means. Chad Omer Haroi L'Chotzer L'Chotzer Haroi L'Gina L'Gina Haroi L'Bisan L'Bisan. One of them says that each person was seated in accordance with what he deserves. So here we're talking about already we're up to the second party, the one that was for all the people in Shushan. But you have different people, different ranks over there. So the ones who are of the rank to be in the Chotzer were in the Chotzer. The ones who are on a higher level to be in the Gina, they're there. And the ones who deserve to be in the Bisan are going to be in the Bisan. The other one says no. What it was is his shivan b'chotzer v'leich l'kasan. He put them in the. He had them sit in the courtyard, but eventually it wasn't big enough because so many people came. Beginner v'leich l'kasan. Then the overflow went into the garden and it still wasn't enough. Ad shechnisam l'bisan v'chzikasan. And then until finally he opened up the bisan itself, and then where the grove of trees or the palace, as the case may be, and then there was enough room for the overflow over there. Anaf Yosef, by the way, brings in on a drasha level of it. We know that a lot of things that are going on in the Megillah also reflect the relationship between the Eivishter and us. There's the famous thing, for example, where every time it says HaMelech in the Megillah, it refers to Hashem, and Achshveirosh represents the Eivishter, the Achrus, Vereshus, Shaloi, and so forth. And so he brings from the Vilna Gaon a similar idea. You have three different levels. You have the Mechtoseh Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you have the regular Olam, you have regular Gan Eden, and then you have Olam HaZeh. So each person gets a place appropriate to his standing, and so to speak. Sometimes you have like there's an overflow kind of, in other words, that sometimes you have like there's a the Olam HaZeh is not enough for a certain class of person, so therefore the Eibishter puts him in Gan Eden in Gan Eden, which is higher, and then even Gan Eden may not be high enough for what he deserves, and therefore the Eibishter brings him Bimchitzaseh.
Tell
them. The Pashtus, they told them. I'm a Sama, they had ushers and whatever. Yeah.
I'm talking about, in terms of the importance of.
Yeah, I'm saying Mastama, they had Mastama. Achshverosh told his ushers to take everybody to their appropriate place. Yeah. The Masnisatana, in a Braisa, we learn a third possibility. Hashivan Bachotzer, Achashverosh had them all sit in the courtyard. And he made sure that there were doors open to go in one direction to the garden and in the other direction to the Bisan. Meaning, in other words, Ben Yehoyada says, after a while, they may be tired of sitting in the chotzer and just sitting there and feasting, and they wanted to go take a stroll. So therefore, they have their choice whether to go to the garden or to the grove of trees. Okay. Next. Next, when it says Chor Karpas of Schelas, the pasuk describes the hangings that they had over there. So what my Chor? So Karpas, we're going to get to soon. Schelas is fairly obvious. We know what that is. What is Chor? Rav and Shmuel. So again, Rav and Shmuel argue what it means. Chad Omer Chori Chori. One says that it means something that was woven with holes. So like lace work. It was a very fancy lace that he had hanging over there. V'chad Omer Melas Levana Hitzilahem. So according to him, in other words, the word chur is related to the word chur, which means a hole. So it was a design full of holes, a lacy design. The other one says that he spread out for them clean white wool. We find in various places in the Gemara that melas is a particularly high quality of wool. They make sure the wool stays clean from when the animal is born, and they make sure so it stays extra white and clean. So according to that, the word chur is related to the word chivar, which is the Aramaic word for white. So therefore, it was white, pure white bedspreads that he led and hangings that he put out for them. Next, what is karpas? On the pasuk say that karpas would mean some kind of greenish cloth, similar to the color of karpas, like we eat by the seder potatoes, which aren't green, but that's a whole other matter. But in principle, karpas is parsley or something like that, which is green anyway. But here the Gemara darshins differently. Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina, korim shel pasim. It means that they had pillows of various colors. So korim are Korima pillows, passim, like Xonis passim of Yosef, means that they were striped or that they were made out of various kinds of fine designs and whatever. So that's the karpas. Next, when it says mitos zahav v'chesef, when it says that they had couches of gold and silver. Remember, in those times, everybody ate leaning, like similar to what we do by the Seder. So therefore, they had couches there for everybody to recline on and eat. So the couches were made out of gold and silver. Now, why gold and silver? What, Achshverosh is not rich enough to provide everybody with gold? Oh, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, again, haroi lakesef lakesef, haroi lazahav lazahav. It depends on how important the person is. The more important people get gold couches, the less important ones get silver couches. Amalei Rav Nechemia, ken kinam ata mata basoda. So Rav Nechemia says, then you're going to make people jealous of each other. Another person is going to look over at the other one and says, why does he deserve to be on gold and I'm only on silver? Ella, hein shel kesef, ra'glaim shel zahav. Rather, it means the actual bed frame itself was made out of silver, and the legs were made out of gold. Now, first of all, Tosfos points out when we just had before, we had different people were sitting in the, according to one opinion, in the chotzer and the gina and the bisan. Why wasn't Rav Nechemia concerned over there about that they might be jealous of each other? So Tosfos says because those are different parts of the palace complex, so they're not necessarily seeing each other, so therefore there's no jealousy. But here, Bapashkos, we're talking about the gold and silver couches are all near each other. You don't necessarily have one area with all gold and another one with all silver, and therefore Rav Nechemia is saying that that would have caused people to be jealous of each other. So what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Ben Yehoyada says, well, what Achashverosh did is he put the silver couches in the more important area and the gold ones in the less important area. So that way a person is either he feels more honorable, I'm sitting in a more honorable area, or that I'm sitting on a gold couch, as the case may be. And this way nobody's jealous of each other because everybody realizes that I have an advantage over the other guy. But Rav Nechemia doesn't like that. So why does he say then that the frames were made out of silver and the legs out of gold? Why not the other way around? So Marsha says the reason is because, after all, the beds are covered with bedspreads. So if you have it, the frame of the bed is made out of gold, you're not going to see it anyhow. So they might as well have the part of the bed that's anyway going to be covered with the bedspreads and the linens and whatnot should be made out of silver, where you're not going to see it anyhow. And the legs, which are going to be exposed, those should be made out of gold. Ben Yehoyada gives a different reason. He's practically speaking, gold is a lot heavier than silver. If they made the legs out of silver and the body of the bed out of gold, it would break. So therefore, they had to do it the other way around in order for it to be stable. Okay. So those were the beds, or the couches, whatever. Then the pasuk continues, Ritzvas Bahat Vashesh. Then they had a pavement of Bahat Vashesh Vidarvas and Choras. So on the simple meaning, those are just various kinds of precious stones. But the Gemara is bothered by, in particular, we don't find these mentioned anywhere else. Now, we have a lot of precious stones. We have the 12 stones of the Choshen. We have a couple of other precious stones that are mentioned here and there in Tanakh. These ones, Bahat Vashesh, okay, you have Amud Shesh in the previous pasuk, but Bahat Dar Sechores, you never find them anywhere else. So what does it mean? So my Bahat, Omer Rab Yosef Rab Chanina, or Omer Rab Asi, Avonim Shemeschoytetois Al Baalei. These are precious stones which are used for the pavement over there, where a person has to dig very hard for them. In other words, these are very expensive stones, and a person has to dig and put in a tremendous amount of effort in order to be able to find. Not we don't mean dig them out of the ground. We mean, in other words, that they're so expensive it costs a lot of money, and he has to put in a lot of effort to go and find anybody who even has such stones for sale, and then spend a huge amount of money on them. Others say that this is only in Yaakov here, it's not in the printed Gemaras, that another meaning that they dig out the eyes in the place. In other words, they're so bright and sparkly, like a person is blinded by the radiance of them. So where do we see the word, where do we see that stones, that precious stones, can be described with that kind of terminology? The pasuk talking about the Jewish people, the Asid Lavoi, where the Goyim are going to, all the nations are going to realize how important the Jewish people are compared to everybody else, that they're like precious stones in a crown, and it uses the expression misnoisisos. Now, the word misnoisisos is Meloshin nisoyin. So it means the same way as Bahat, where we're doushing mischoitos, and we're exchanging the hay for a ches, as the Gemara often does in Derashas. So we're saying Bahat is Meloshin ches tes, which is the shorish of the word mischoitos. The same way, we see that precious stones are described as misnoisisos, Meloshin nisoyin. A person has to go through a lot of nisoyinus in order to get such precious stones. So we see that the same way precious stones can be described as Bahat, Meloshin mischoitos, that a person has to dig and search a lot to find such stones. And Achashverosh had a whole pavement of them. So that's Bahat. Sheish, the Gemara doesn't bother with, because Bapashto's Sheish is marble, Shayish, you have it's called elsewhere. So what's Vidarva Sechores? So again, we have Rav and Shmuel argue about it. Rav Omer Dori Dori. Rav says that the word Dar is an Aramaic word that means a row. So it means that they had rows and rows of such stones making up the pavement all around where everybody was eating. Shmuel says there's a type of precious stone that you can find in the cities near the coast, which is called Dora. So the Dar is that. So he put it out for them. He put such a stone by the Suda, and it's shown for them. Or a different girsa in the printed Gemaras, Hoshiva be'emsa Suda. He put it. He suspended it in the middle over there, where the party is taking place. And it's shown for them as brightly as new. Ben Yehoyada says, in other words, what it was is the stone acted like a lens to refract and reflect the light. So by day, he would put it in the sunlight. By night, they would have a torch or something shining, burning near it, and therefore it would reflect the light, and you'd have a tremendous amount of illumination in the whole party from this. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, and then in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a third thing, that the words Dar V'Sechores, according to Rav's explanation, Dar means rows, and Sechores means around. Means around. So they had rows and rows of such stones around the whole banqueting area. According to Shmuel, the vort is, the Dar is the name of the stone. Sechores, Rashi says, is Meloshin Sihar, or Meloshin the moon. It's shown as brightly as the moon for them. Vei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, and in the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a third meaning of the Dar Sechores, Shekora Dror, L'chol Baalei Schora, that Achashverosh announced an exemption of taxes for everybody who's selling merchandise. So that way, in other words, prices are cheaper, and that way they're able to buy more things. That way they're able to get more things for the party, and everybody in general in Shushan is enjoying themselves. They're able, their money goes a lot further than it was otherwise. So according to that, Dar is Meloshin Dur, and Secharis is Meloshin Schur, all the merchants. So that way, in other words, Rashi explains that way. Also, nachas ruach l'chol b'nei malchus. This way, like he puts everybody at ease. That not only they're able to enjoy everything that's going on at the party, but they're also feeling good about themselves. That now they have a rebate on taxes and they're doing better financially. Pasuk continues. V'hashkus b'chlei zahav. Achashverosh gave everybody by the party to drink with golden kelim. V'chelim mikelim shoni and various kinds of kelim. Now, if shonim just meant various, then the word mishunim, mibola, you would expect it to say mishunim, which means different or various. Why instead does it say shonim, which is more meloshin? The word shonim is more meloshin shona, which means to repeat. So Omer Rabba or Rava, Yotza Baskol v'Omer Lahem, and the Baskol came and announced to them, Rishonim Kolum Mipnei Kalim, the earlier ones, Belshazzar, was wiped out because of these Kalim. Because as we learned before, Belshazzar, only a few years earlier, had made his party and used the Kalim of the Bismikdash. And then the hand came and wrote on the wall, Menemenates Kalim Pirasin. And that night, Belshazzar was killed and the empire above her was over. Ba'atim Shonim V'Shosim Behem, and you're repeating the mistake and drinking from them as well. So don't you realize what you're getting yourselves into? So Marashar explains, in that case, the words v'chelim, mikelim, shonim, means like this. The word kelim, the double expression, v'chelim, mikelim, one of them means kelim, the other one is meloshin kelayin, destruction. So the Baskel is saying, because of these kelim, an earlier generation, Belshazzar, only a few years ago, was destroyed, and now shonim, and now you're repeating the same mistake. And the result is going to be similar, as we have that we learned the other day, in fact, that Vashti ended up getting killed as a result of all of this. Marsha also brings, by the way, from a medrash, from the Targum, actually, that says another meaning of shonim also means Achashverosh first brought out his own cave. Then he brought out the kelim of the Bais Mikdash, and by comparison with the beauty of the kelim of the Bais Mikdash, his looked like they were just made out of lead, as though they were nothing. So they're showing him they look visibly different from the beauty of the kelim of the Bais Mikdash. But still, Maharsha says the Gemara over here doesn't like that, because still it would have said mishunim. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to understand shonim as repeating, and meaning in other words that the Baskel is saying you're repeating the same mistake of Belshazzar. The pasuk continues v'yein malchus rov. A lot of wine from the king. So in the simple meaning, rov means a lot. But then it would be merub. Then the expected word would be merubah or something. Rov literally means great. So omad rova or rav malamich kolach vechad ishko yayin shu godim menem b'shanim. Every person was given wine to drink that was older than he was. Meaning because that way it's better quality wine. So that's rov. Each person's wine was rov, was greater and older than he was. The pasuk continues, Vashsiya Chados, the drinking was according to the law. What law are we talking about? Omer of Onan or Rav Chanan, Mishum Rav Meir, Kados Shel Torah, means that Achashverosh, in planning the menu for the party, he made it to follow the law of the Torah. Why would he do that? We'll talk about in a second. But Ma Das Shel Torah, Achila Meruba Mishsiya, when it comes to the law of the Torah, consider the korbanos, Rashi says. You have when you have what's eaten by the mizbeach, the solid food that's burnt on the mizbeach, the animals for the korbanos and the mincha that goes along with it. Then you also have what's poured on the mizbeach for it to drink, so to speak, the wine. And you have a lot more solids than you do liquids. Because, for example, a par is brought as a korban. You have the whole par. Then you have three esroinim of flour, and you have a half a hin of wine. Now, an isorin is a shiur challah, somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds, depending which posik you ask. So three esroinim is somewhere between about 10 and 15 pounds. Meanwhile, the chatzia hin of wine, a hin is around a gallon, give or take. So a chatzia hin is around half a gallon, around four pounds is the equivalent. So there's a lot more, plus you have the par itself. So you have a lot more eating than you do drinking. So in the same way, the same way, by Achashverosh's party, there was more eating than drinking. Now, first of all, Tosfos points out, actually, there is a Gemara in Nida that says that a person that's unhealthy for a person to eat too much compared to his drinking, Tosfos says that's talking about where it's an excessively large amount more. It should be moderately more eating than drinking, but not so much. So Achshverosh followed that. Now, why would he do such a thing? So Marashah says the vort is like this. Achshverosh, he may not have heard that baskel that we just said, but he was very conscious of the fact that Belshazzar had done the same thing only a few years earlier and lost his life and his whole empire because of it. So he's at least trying in his own Goyish cup way to avoid the same mistake. So he figured, what was the problem with Belshazzar, he thinks to himself? Not so much that he drank from the kelim of the Bismikash, but that he got very drunk. The Pasuk says over there that Belshazzar, as we're going to have soon, when Vashti is yelling at Achashverosh, she says that my father Belshazzar was able to drink as much as 1,000 regular people. The Pasuk in Daniel, when it describes Belshazzar's party, says that he drank corresponding to 1,000, meaning he was able to drink as much as 1,000 normal people. So therefore, Achashverosh figures, well, that was the problem, that he got drunk on the kelim of the Bismikdash. Well, I'm going to avoid that. I'm going to make sure then that Achila Merubah Mashiach, so I and the other guests don't get too drunk, and that way we'll evade any punishment that Hashem has planned for us. So that was his mentality. The Maharam Shif says a different vort on it. We started talking about yesterday that he says that in many ways Achashverosh tried to, so to speak, model his party on the Avodah and the Bismikdash. That's what he said. That was one reason why he wore the Bigda Kohona. So now we're saying another example of it is, given that he was aware how the Korbanos work in the Bismikdash, then he bedavka consciously modeled his party on that so that it should be like a l'umas zeh of the Avodah and the Bismikdash. Next, when it says ein oynes, there was no forcing. So what does that mean? Omar Rava or Rav Elazar melamed shekol echad v'echad ishko yayin shel medinasei, means that each person was given wine from his own country, because that way a person is more used to the wine from where he comes from. Wine from someplace else a person is not used to, and he may get drunk on it more easily. Like this, when he's used to it, he knows the taste and he knows how much of it he can hold. Then every person would drink in accordance with what he figures he can take. The Targum also, by the way, mentions in this connection the famous thing that they had a minhag by Persian banquets. They would have this gigantic cup, and they would when they offered it to somebody, he was required to drink it no matter how sick it makes him. And he, Achashverosh, told them to not bring out that cup. Ein oynes. There's not going to be any forcing anybody to drink. Now the pasuk continues. Kichen yisad amelach al kol rav beisoy. The king has established this among all the great people, among all of the high level servants and whatever of his household. Lasis kirtzon ish v'ish, to do according to the will of a man and a man. Now in the simple meaning, it means just in the word to do according to what everybody wants. But why the expression ish v'ish? So Amar Rav, lasis kirtzon Mordechai v'Haman, means that Achashverosh wanted everything to be done according to the way that Mordechai and Haman want. Rashi explains that they were the two Sore Hamashkim by the party. Now, Achashverosh wants to make sure that all of their instructions are followed. Marashah says not necessarily Mordechai and Haman themselves, especially what would Mordechai be doing over there if we certainly didn't want. We said yesterday how everybody got in trouble for Nanu Sudasa Shalai Sudasha. What would Mordechai be doing there in the first place? Rather, Marashah says that what we mean is Mordechai as the representative of the Jewish people and Haman as the representative of the Goy. We don't mean that they themselves personally were present necessarily. We mean that they're being used as the representatives of their respective nations. Now, Mordechai wanted, obviously, they shouldn't be eating or drinking anything that's also. Haman would want that they should be eating anything. So therefore, Achashverosh is making sure that both of what they want is accommodated. Whoever wants to eat the non-kosher food, it's available for them. Whoever wants to eat kosher food, then he'll make sure that there are kosher tables there as well. So according to Rashi, he actually was. According to Rashi, he was one of the Sore Hamash. Marashah is saying on the face of it not, because why would Mordechai himself have been there? Rather, it means that Mordechai was telling the Jews, don't go over there, and meanwhile Achashverosh wants them to go, but therefore so Achashverosh made sure that they should have kosher food. Where do we see that ish ve'ish means them? Because each one of them is called an ish. Mordechai dechtiv ish yehudi hoya, Haman dechtiv ish tzav ve'oyev. So each one of them right there in the Megillah is being called ish, and therefore the word ish for ish can refer to them. There is an explanation about that, actually, that what it means is that neither Mordechai nor Haman wanted the Jews to be forced to drink Yayin Nesach. Mordechai, obviously not, because it would be also. Haman also didn't want them to be forced to, because Haman knew if they're forced to, then they have an excuse. Well, then the Eibishter is not going to get them in trouble. Ernest Rahman Apatri. So he wanted they shouldn't be forced, and then they're going to end up drinking it voluntarily, and then they're going to get in trouble. Then they're going to have the problem of Nen Musudasa Shalai Sudasha. So it comes out when the Ein Onis was Lasis Kirt Sainish Vish, it fulfilled both what Mordechai and what Haman wanted, just that they each wanted the same thing, but for opposite reasons. I think, in fact, the Maharam Shif even says, I don't remember if the Maharam Shif says this or someone else, but that also goes with the Achila Merubah Mashiach. It means, in other words, that this way there's much less chance that people are going to get drunk, and when they're drunk, after all, they're potter from whatever they do. So therefore, so Ahasuerus wanted to make sure that it shouldn't be like that, so that they'll still be in full possession of their faculties, and then the Eibishter can be angry at them for what they're doing, that they're there in the first place, and that they're eating, and whatever they're going to end up doing for there. Next, the pasuk says, "Gam Vashti Amalka Osta Mishte Noshim Beis Hamalchos." That also Queen Vashti made a party for the women in the Beis Hamalchos. The question is, why is she making it in Beis Hamalchos? Beis Hanoshim Mibolei. The expected place where she would make a party for the women would be in the Beis Hanoshim, in the women's quarters in the palace, which is a more tzniyistic place. Omer of Abba Bar Kahana or Rava Malamet Shneim Ledvar Avera Niskavni. This teaches us that both Ahasuerush and Vashti wanted Dvar Aveda, they wanted Znus to take place over there. So therefore, so she wanted that the party for the women should take place in Beis Hamalchus, in full view of the men, and that way there's more likely to be a breakdown and decorum and for there to be Znus. Hainu Da'amri Inshi, this is like the expression people say, Ihu Bei Kori V'Itase Bei Butzini. He, a man who regularly is mizaneh, he's involved with Kori and his wife with butzini. Rashi explains that Kori are large pumpkins and butzini are small ones. Meaning, in other words, that the popular expression says that when you have a man who's publicly mizaneh, then his wife is also doing it, but more in secret. So like he's involved with the larger pumpkins, and his wife is also involved with the same men, but in a smaller and slightly more hidden way. So the same way Ahasuerus being into Znus, Vashti is also into Znus, and therefore she's making her party in a way that's going to promote that. Hakosef brings over here from Tosfos, it's not printed here in Megillah, but Tosfos does make this point in some other places in Shas, that the fact is that Kori and Butzini are actually two different, we find from other Gemaras, are actually two different species. So not like Rashi's saying over here that Butzini are smaller ones and Kori are the same ones when they grow larger, but rather that they're actually two different species. So therefore, what it says is that, what Tosfos says is that, no, what it means is, Kori are a type of vegetable that have large leaves. Butzini are another type of pumpkin or cucumber or whatever that have smaller leaves. So the leaves metaphorically that represent what a person is hiding under to commit his aveiros. So the man then is hiding among the kori, among the ones with large leaves. Like he's making more of an effort to conceal, to cover his tracks with, so to speak, with the larger leaves. Meanwhile, his wife is more shameless, and she only bothers with the one, being around the ones with the small leaves, meaning, in other words, she's less concerned about being found out. So the same way over here, again, it expresses the idea that Ahasuerus is into Znus, and his wife even more so. Then there's also Hakosev brings from the Oruch another meaning as well, that the Kori and Butzini are vegetables where the shape and the consistency of them can actually be used by a person to satisfy themselves with Znus when nobody else is available, and therefore it represents the idea that both the man and the woman use them for those kinds of purposes. Anyway, the point is, however we understand it, the point is that, in other words, you shouldn't think that Ahasuerus, who we're going to say soon, he wanted to have Vashti appear over there without clothing, that you're going to say that he's the porutz, but maybe she's more tzniyistik because she didn't want to come, as we're going to say. No, you should be aware they were both pritzistika people. Next, the pasuk says, "Bayoyim Ashvi Ketov Lev Hamelach Bayoyin." On the seventh day, when the king's heart was merry and happy with wine, So the question is, why Epis on the seventh day? What, he first felt good drinking on the seventh day? He had a party going on there already for 180 days, and now for another 7 days. This is the first time that he felt good from his drinking? We don't just mean the seventh day of the party. We mean the seventh day of the week. Meaning, Marusha says, because otherwise there's no particular reason to mention by Yom HaShvi. So therefore, so it means it was not just Yom HaShvi as in the seventh day of the party, it was the seventh day of the week, Shabbos. Now let's see the difference. On Shabbos, when we Jews have feast and eat and drink, then we speak Divrei Torah, we say words of praise to Hashem. When they eat, when the Goyim eat and drink, and have parties, then they start talking about foolishness, and tiflos is more than foolishness. Tiflos is a combination of foolishness and degrading things, like things that are improper kind of things to talk about. In fact, we say on Shabbos afternoon, when we have Bar Mincha, when we say Ba'anis Filosi, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it comes exactly from that point. David HaMelech is saying in the psukim before that in Kapitel Samach Tes, Yosichu v'Yoshua Sharon Gunis Shoyse Shecher. Like this, you have the Goyim are sitting at the gates and in their bars and whatever, and they're eating and drinking and feasting, and they talk about us. They talk Pritzos and Tiflos and whatever about us. V'ani Sfilosi L'Chashem Esratzen. But we, having had a whole great Shabbos meal, we don't do that. We come to the shul and we listen to Kriyas HaTorah and we dab. So there's the contrast. So here we see the similar contrast that on Shabbos, and with how we Jews act after feasting versus how the Goyim act after feasting. There is, in fact, an explanation that one of the Mefoshim on the Megillah says that, in fact, on that day, the Jews Taka did not attend the party. They were there before, and they were Nenim and Sodase, as we said, with all the problems with that. But on Shabbos, at least they realize it's not a place for a Yid to be, and that was a schus that helped save them. So anytime Goyim have parties like that, then they start talking divrei tiflus. V'chein b'sudas yishalos rosha. Exactly the same thing happened by that rosha's suda, by Achashverosh's suda. What happened was halolo oimim mordius nois, v'halolo oimim pausius nois. So the various nobles and whatever over there from Paras and Madai start arguing among themselves which women are more beautiful, the ones from Madai or the ones from Paras. Achashverosh tells them, Kli shani mishtamish boy, the keli that I use, meaning the wife that I have and I have relations with, ain't loy modi v'loy parsi ela kasti. She's from neither one of those nations. She's a kasti. She's a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar and then the kasti. Ritzonchem l'roisa, do you want to see her? And you'll see that she's the most beautiful of all. Omrloy ain. So they answered him, yes, uvad shetei aruma, as long as she comes unclothed. Now, how did they even have the chutzpah to ask such a thing? Ben Yehoyada says that actually was. So first of all, Marusha says actually that based on the Medrash, that Achshverosh says she's the most beautiful, and they say, well, yeah, of course, you bring a queen dressed up in finery and jewels and whatnot. Of course, she's going to look the most beautiful. She has to come without all of that, and Achshverosh, being a tippish, agreed to that. Ben Yehoyada has another vote on it as well. He says that Achashverosh had in mind, when they're having this argument about which women are more beautiful, Achashverosh has in mind then which ones should he take for his harem. So now, so he would want that all the women should be over there available for him to view to his pleasure. So they tell him. They say, you know what? If you're going to do that, if you're going to have a beauty contest, then you have to have Vashti in the same state. And they figure, well, any sensible person would say, well, nothing doing. In that case, then fine, let's call the whole thing off. But he, being Achashverosh, being a tippish, and being in Tiznus, then he said, Adraba, let's go do that. Well, she didn't agree at first, but wait. Now, why did she deserve such a thing? We know that Eibishter pays a person mida k'neged mida, and this was an example of it. Vashti would take Jewish girls or mafshitosen arumas and force them to undress, and malacha b'shabbos, and force them to do work on Shabbos. Marsha brings from the Targum that says specifically the work that she would have them do on Shabbos would be combing flax or linen. flax or wool. Marshall says, evidently, because that's the most bothersome, at least, you know, those things are very scratchy. At least if a person is wearing clothes, then it's more comfortable. But like this, she was doing that. So she's forcing them to work on Shabbos in that state. Therefore, there was nigzer on her that she should end up being killed on Shabbos without her clothes. That's what the pasuk says. Zocher es vashti v'esa asher asasa. Later on, beginning of Perek Bey, Achashverosh, after he gets over his drunkenness, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, the esa asher nigzer aleha, and what had been decreed on her. Now, why all that expression? So it means asher asa kein nigzer aleha means exactly as she had done was what was decreed on her. Achashverosh was aware of what she had done in the past involving these Jewish girls, and therefore now he realized, now he chapzach, that now she was punished midah keneged midah. What?
So when she killed on Shabbos, they killed her back.
No, she didn't kill these girls. She just forced them to work. Where do you see that she? No, Mavias Benes Yisrael, she tossing out rumors. Now, I mean, it's very possible if where first of all, where are you reading from? Okay, I'm reading Ein Yaakov too. I don't see those words that you're quoting. Where do you see anything about her killing them? Where are you reading that from? What? I showed you three times. You said, which part, what on the page over here are you reading that from?
Okay, whatever.
And if you have that, I'd like to see it, but I don't see it anywhere here on the page. So if you want to show me where you're getting that from, then good. I know it's a school, but let's see. Okay, so you could have said, you could have said to begin with, Iyun Yaakov says, and I would have known to look in Iyun Yaakov. Okay, so you could have looked at me, you could have looked at the header and told me. Okay, it's fine. So Iyun Yaakov says that if they didn't want to work, then she would kill them. Fine. Okay, it's a valid point. I mean, that would explain more of the midah keneged midah, that she was actually killed on Shabbos because she would kill them for not listening to her. Right. With that said, by the way, the Chassam Sofer says an interesting vote on it. He says it doesn't necessarily mean that she literally had them undressed completely. He says it means that she would make them wear the type of goyish pritzistic clothing, which is very revealing. And that, in turn, once she breaks down that sense of tznius of theirs and that sense of being different than the goyim, then that was a natural gateway to Chilul Shabbos. So she was punished on Shabbos in the same kind of way. Next, the pasuk says Vatimoina Malka Vashti. It says that Queen Vashti refused to come. The question is why? Mechti Pritzosa Havia. We just said that she was a Prutza as well. Dama Mar Shneim Ledvaravera and Skabnu. We just said they both had in mind Ledvaravera. Amai Loyasoi. Why didn't she come? Omer Rav Yosef Bar Chanina Malamecha Porcha Batzaras. That teaches us that Tzaras broke out on her and therefore she was embarrassed to come. Tosfos brings. Rashi and Tosfos both bring from Yerushalmi. How do we know specifically Tzaras? Because we have the word over here by her where it says Asher Nigzar Aleha. You have the same expression used by Uzziyahu, the king of Yehuda, who got Tzaras, where it says Ki Nigzar Mi Beis Hashem. So therefore we learn that by her also it was Nigzar means Tzaras, just like it does by Uzziyahu. So therefore she's embarrassed to come. In a braisa we learn that Gavriel came and made her a tail. So therefore again she's embarrassed to come. Now, with that said, a tail doesn't. First of all, Akosev brings over here from the Yerushalmi. How do we know a tail? Is because you have the expression Asher Nigza Aleha on her. We find a similar expression Aleha referring to a tail of an animal in a story in Sefer Shmuel when Shaul meets Shmuel for the first time, where it mentions over there Ashoik Veheh Aleha, which means the leg of the animal and the tail. So we see that Aleha refers to the alya, refers to the tail. With that said, though, Akosev also brings from the Rashba that the word zonav doesn't necessarily literally mean a tail like you'd find on a cat or a dog or something. The word zonav in general means something unimportant. So therefore, what it can mean over here, in other words, not that literally Gavriel made a tail on her, but for example, let's say that she got a big wart or something on her body, something that made her look very, very disfigured and very ugly, and therefore, and that's why she didn't want to come. Similarly, the Maharal says that the word zonav in general can mean something extra. So it can even mean, like, for example, she looked in the mirror, weighed herself or whatever, and found that she had gained a few pounds, and now she's feeling too heavy and not feeling up to coming and displaying herself in front of everybody. So whatever the case, that's why she didn't come, and the result was, as we'll continue learning tomorrow, Rav Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Aleph Adar Beis. The story is told about one of the great tzaddikim that when he was a little kid, he once asked his father to give him an apple, and the father didn't want to give him. So the kid was smart, and he said a bracha, bara pri eitz, and the father doesn't want the son to say a bracha batola, so he quickly gave him the apple. So in the same way, the Rebbe says that when it comes to the Geula, we also have to be smart like that, and we have to act like that kid. If we already start to have the Simchas Geula and have complete betochen that Hashem will send us Mashiach quickly, then that itself, so to speak, forces Hashem to send Mashiach right away. Which bracha? And the point is that Rebbe is saying not a specific bracha, but simcha. It is said in a similar vein. It does say, I think it is brought similarly about the bracha goyel Yisrael and Shemana Esrei. That in particular the same thing. A person taka has deep kavana in it. That it means that the Eibishter is bringing geula to the Jewish people. And I don't have to say. I think now that I think of it, I don't think it says about goyel Yisrael. I think it says about slach lonu. I think it says. That if a person says slach lonu with kavana, then since chanun hamabul asloyach, so again that sort of forces the Eibishter to forgive. But yeah, here the Rebbe is talking about simcha.
Right?
What? Goyel Yisrael means our individual challenges. Yes, I think I was wrong about that. It's not Goyel Yisrael. It's. Okay. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos, you're not allowed to strain any kind of liquid. There are various dinim. Sometimes technically it's allowed, but it can get complicated. You are, though, allowed to drink a drink using a filter, meaning in other words, like you put a cloth over the cup or whatever, and you drink through the cloth. Here, you just, because that's just preventing anything that you don't want in there from getting into your mouth, and that's fine. However, though, actually, so with a cloth, actually, it wouldn't. Yesh oystrim with a cloth, actually, because you have the problem of washing. So you could use some other kind of filter or strainer or whatever and put that over the cup, but not necessarily a cloth. B'shas etchak, if a person doesn't have clean water to drink, then he can be makel on that. Still, though, one other possibility that he mentioned, the person might want to use a sleeve for that purpose. That, you have a bigger problem. Shema yischot, he might squeeze it out afterwards, and that would be a different malacha, so that would be a problem in itself. But so all told, then, so you can't strain it ahead of time. You can drink through a strainer or something like that, but not a cloth unless b'shas etchak, and not to use your sleeve. That's the summary of it.